Order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, February the 11th, and we will go into public hearings today on House Bill 5026 and House Bill 5051 as they relate to the Board of Examiners for Speech and Language Pathology. We will also go into a public hearing on House Bill 5026 and House Bill 5050 as they relate to the Board of Radiologic Technology. Before we begin, do you have any announcements for the committee that we things we need to know in order to do a good job today?
I believe so.
The only thing that I have that I need to let you know so that we can do a good job is that Leanne Thompson has been kind enough to bring us some home-baked chocolate chip cookies.
And they're good.
So,
mine is half gone.
Members of the committee, please avail yourself of that wonderful opportunity there. And what I'll do now is open a public hearing on House Bill 5026 and House Bill 5051. Mr. Olson, can you talk to us from the LFO perspective?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Good morning. The Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology budget is before you, along with a fee bill. I'll talk to that in a moment. The budget is 3.2% increase over the 0103 legislatively approved budget. Again, like the other boards that you've been hearing, this board is supported 100% by other funds. It comes from fees, from licensees, and applications and miscellaneous fees. No budget notes, no audit reports, no interim studies were conducted. During the 2001 session, House Bill 3268 was adopted, which directed this board to institute a fee for speech-language pathology assistant, which was a new category for them and a new fee. The board has adopted administrative rule to institute that fee under the advice and direction of the legislature from last session. Because it's been done administratively, they need to reappear before this legislature to have that fee ratified as part of that process that we talked about in full committee last Friday. Again, the growth, we continue to experience a growth in the demand for speech language pathology and audiology services, and the number of licensees continues to grow, and so their workload continues to increase. That's it.
Questions or comments for Mr. Olson? You're getting off very easily today. Would Ms. Felber, Ms. Pierce-Hopper, and Mr. Torgerson come forward on behalf of the Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and sign in and give us the agency presentation?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Brenda Felber, the Executive Officer for the Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. Leslie Pierce-Hopper, Board Member and Speech-Language Pathologist, is with me this morning to answer any questions relating to the professions. The Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology was created by the 1973 legislature. The board is composed of 7 members, 1 physician with certification from the American Board of Otolaryngology, 2 speech-language pathologists, 2 audiologists, and 2 public members, 1 executive officer and 1 office specialist at a total of 0.85 FTE provide administrative and clerical support to the board. The board was created in 1973, and the authority and responsibilities are contained in the Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 681 and the Oregon Administrative Rules Chapter 335. The board serves to ensure public safety in the practice of speech-language pathology and audiology. The board is currently conducting investigations resulting from 4 complaints. The number of complaints vary from year to year, with some years having none. Recent complaints charge incompetent practice and may result in hearings before the end of this biennium. The board currently licenses 1,370 practitioners. Approximately 1,000 of them are speech-language pathologists. A new category of certification for speech-language pathology assistants became effective last month. Performance measures were developed under the direction of Rita Conrad of the Oregon Progress Board. The board developed three performance measures, one relating to measuring progress of the new law requiring certification of speech assistants, and one will continue to track performance relating to continuing education requirements. The third relates to collecting ethnicity information from our licensees pursuant to Senate Bill 786. Data collection has begun. We include the survey form with all applications and direct current licensees to complete this form whenever they visit our agency website. We also include the survey form with every renewal application by the end. I include the survey form with every renewal application by the end of this year. In September of last year, at their quarterly meeting, the board discussed ways to promote the profession, the other component of Senate Bill 786. The board agreed to participate in a statewide Health Career Day in October that was sponsored by the Oregon Health Career Center, which is an independent, not-for-profit organization dedicated to education and training in the health professions. The board was represented by licensed speech-language pathologists who distributed 100 brochures at the board's expense. The brochure was purchased from the National Professional Organization, the American Speech and Hearing Association, and it was entitled, I believe I put a couple of them, the only ones I had left, in your binders. It's entitled Close Up on Your Future, Your Career in Audiology, Speech-Language Pathology, Speech-Language, and Hearing Science. The board also plans to partner with the local chapter of ASHA. The board submits two policy packages, one which will establish fees for the new category of certification for speech assistants. The legislature passed House Bill 3268 during the 2001 session directing the board to establish fees for this category of certification. The board set the certificate fee at $50 per biennium. This is half of what is charged to licensed speech pathologists and audiologists. The board set the fee as low as possible because the assistants are expected to be low-wage earners. Estimated impact of the package is $3,950. The other policy package is to improve agency effectiveness and efficiency through partnerships with other state licensing boards. The board recognizes that this small agency greatly benefits from annual attendance at a conference such as the one sponsored by the National Council of State Boards of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. The total request for this package is $2,000. The board requests approval of the governor's balanced budget of $163,120, which is total other funds. And I thank you for your attention and consideration of this request.
Questions or comments? Ms. Pierce-Hoffer, did you have anything that you wanted to add to this?
I am here just to answer questions. So.
Okay. I do have a question.
Representative Smith.
On the agency summary tab of the notebook, page 2 of 3, you have a key performance measure. It says, number of Oregon school districts with a certified speech assistant on staff. Well, maybe I'm reading this wrong. There are 198 school districts. You're not saying you have 198 speech. I'm sorry. I misread that because I knew that they didn't have a speech assistant in every school district because I know because of budget cuts, that's been taken away. I misread the information.
Okay. I have a number of questions related to your performance measures. There isn't anything here on what I would call the customer satisfaction side of the equation. How can we gauge that you're serving the licensees in a relevant kind of a way? That I would be looking for some kind of data that showed the turnaround time on the issuance of licenses and some kind of data to show that the people that you license are satisfied with the level of service that they're getting from your board. and some kind of information about how, what kind of timeline you're dealing with complaints on, whether you're being able to process your complaint issues and resolve those issues in a timely kind of a manner. So I'd ask the staff that when we get into work session and start talking about the performance measures, that we do put some energy into the customer satisfaction side of this. Did you want to comment on that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when we drafted the performance measures, we did consider including those. Being a small board, I was concerned about being able to manage the data and keep track of this. And so I chose things that I knew were critical to the board. In my experience, I've been in the position for 6 years, and generally the anecdotal feedback that we get about the turnaround time of our applications, you spoke to a couple of things, but the turnaround time of our applications exceeds that of other states. Generally speaking, the feedback that we receive is that they're surprised to get the service that they do from a governmental agency, particularly given that the office is staffed with less than one FTE. As far as the complaints, we follow the I'm not remembering what it, if it's a statute or a rule that requires us to complete complaints, complete investigations within a set period of time. And so that's the standard that the board has used in the past.
If I might just continue the discussion, I think that this is something that's appropriate for us to take up in work session, because we certainly want to be sensitive to what we're unleashing on you in terms of workload issues. But in order for us to be able to make some kind of judgment about, you know, whether things are progressing reasonably within the functioning of the board as related to how you serve your licensees, we need some kind of data, some kind of information that we can gauge progress against. Representative Smith, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. I notice here on your inactive license category you have 225. What is an inactive license?
Representative Smith, members of the committee, excuse me. An inactive license is a license category that was established to keep people basically on the mailing list and keep them in the database as being a past licensee. We keep them informed of what's happening with the licensing board. And then if they choose to become active any time during the licensing period, then they just pay the fee to become licensed. There's no late fee charge.
I have a couple of follow-ups. And how much is that fee related to the active license? I mean,
Representative Smith, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the active fee is $50 per year. The inactive fee is $20 per year.
Okay. And do you have out-of-state licensees?
Yes, we do.
Is it a large percentage, or do you know how much? And is your fee structure the same for your out-of-state licenses?
Representative Smith, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do have out-of-state licensee, and off the top of my head, I'm not sure how many there are. I would guess that it's probably a growing percentage.
Are those active licenses that are out-of-state? Are they practicing?
It would be both.
Could I have a list of those? I mean, could I have a number of what those are and what the fee structure is for your out-of-state licenses?
Certainly.
And then we could look at that during our work session.
Representative Smith, are you interested in the relationship between the number of out-of-state licenses and the number of in-state licenses?
Yes, I am, and I'm also the number and also the fee structure. Are you charging the same for your out-of-state licenses as you are for your in-state licenses, mm-hmm. and why?
Why would someone have an out-of-state license?
Well, they could be practicing out-of-state.
Well, Representative Smith, Madam Chair, members of the committee, a number of speech pathologists, and Leslie might be able to speak better to this, but a number of speech pathologists work for what I refer to as traveling companies, and so they may work a part of the time, part of the year in Oregon. They may work part of the year in California. It just depends on where they're stationed. So that would be one example. The other example is that many speech pathologists and audiologists choose to hold licenses in various states. If they've lived here, they'll continue to pay the fee to have Oregon licensure just because they support the licensing structure.
It's an extra I would think it would be also an extra credential for their practice.
Let me know if I can answer that. Representative Smith, members of the committee, I've been a licensed speech language pathologist in Oregon for 25 years. Six of those years I lived out of state due to my husband's career. I maintained an inactive license and then a license again in Oregon. Did not practice in Oregon at that time. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing an increase in the number of audiologists who are maintaining out-of-state licenses and licenses in Oregon as they are supervising different facets in the hearing aid industry in the state, too.
Well, I guess my comment goes to the same as the naturopath boards and some of those. I think we need to look at the fee structure of our practicing out-of-state licensees because I think that's a credential, you know, that they're obviously a valuable credential, having an Oregon license working in another state.
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, let me make a comment on that. In the past, history has shown that the legislature has held a position that the fees that are established and charged by these boards reflect the costs of actually issuing that license, the staff time, the paper, the postage, and all those things. And I do believe that in some board statutes, It specifies that the fees are to be established based on the cost of producing whatever it is they're producing. So I will do some research on that and try to find the committee some statutory references along those lines as well.
Thank you. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to jump tracks on you here a little bit. Audiologist, as my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, cannot directly dispense or sell hearing aids unless they're also licensed by another board. And I want to know if you have any particular feelings about that as a board. I personally support the idea, knowing the kind of training that audiologists have. Most of them have a master's degree or higher to become an audiologist. It's always struck me as rather strange when I sent a patient out to get an audiologist to evaluate them and always got excellent work done, then I'd say, well, what do you think is the best hearing aid for them? And they say, well, I'm not licensed to dispense or prescribe a hearing aid. And we had to send them to somebody else who, frankly, didn't have the training that they did. Hmm. And it always struck me as an extremely strange situation. I'm looking at a bill that would change that this year. I want to know if your board has a position on that. Maybe that's a hot question I shouldn't have asked.
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates.
I want to know if that's a problem.
I read part of your bill last night on the Internet. So, yes, it's always struck us as strange also. This has been an issue of concern for this board and members of the profession and audiologists in this state for quite some time.
What is how did this come to be?
May I follow up now?
Yes.
You didn't answer the question.
I didn't.
Does the board have a position? Yeah, if you don't, that's okay.
We don't have a position at this time.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Okay. The question is, how did it come about?
Can you give us some idea of why this is the situation that it is?
We've had a very strong hearing aid dealers active group in this state who have been very vocal, and as far as I can tell, that's where the history comes from.
Well, are they trained? Beg your pardon, Madam Chair. So how are people who are giving hearing aids to people, how are they medically trained? Are they?
I can speak to that. Representative Smith, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that to issue a hearing aid dealer's license, it requires a high school education, and then they must pass a state test. I am not well versed in this area, but I remember when we were talking about the piece of legislation to certify speech-language pathology assistants, there was some discussion around the history of this, and that when this board was formed, I guess, the hearing aid dealer's profession was already a legislated entity. And this was kind of an agreement that was made. That's my understanding of history.
The committee members, our esteemed LFO advisor here has informed me that on Monday we'll be talking to the Health Licensing Board about their budget, and that these will be some good issues to talk to them about.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, the Hearing Aid Dealer Board is part of the Health Licensing Office, which will be here next Monday for their budget hearing.
Okay, great.
My point, Madam Chair, if I can make... We're not trying to take something away from the hearing aid dealers. They will still have a right to do their business and their work. And I understand a lot of third-party payers probably won't pay for hearing aids unless it goes to an audiologist or an ear, nose, and throat specialist or a physician. And that's sort of a limit on that. But people can go directly to hearing aid dealers and buy from them if they wish to, which I don't have any problem with. My concern is that I think an audiologist and physicians have an ability to not have to go through a licensing board in addition to their own board to dispense from right. It's equivalent to me being told, I think, that I cannot give shots or pass out medications in my office because I have to have somebody else do that, or I have to have somebody else license me in addition to the Board of Medical Examiners. And that's the way I look at this, and I hope it's a parallel track in my thinking that's real. So that's why that change has been proposed this year, and I'm supporting it. I guess it is my bill, but I don't think it was my bill. Okay.
Well, now that we've given you a great platform to lobby for your bill. Yeah.
It's just what's good for the people.
And you hope to get a hearing on that bill?
Probably not after this. It's probably dead now.
I'm looking at the structure of the board, and you have a quarter-time FTE office specialist. Who does that person... accomplish all the functions that you need to accomplish, or do you use some other auxiliary sources to help do your payroll and your bookkeeping and that kind of stuff?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do receive our bookkeeping functions and other support from the Department of Administrative Services. We have... Generally speaking, we are able to provide the clerical and administrative support. The board does have contracts with an investigator and a database support person.
Do you have a website?
Yes, we do.
And does your office specialist administer the website, too?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, actually we have a great office specialist who has been able to do more of that. Before, we were paying the Department of Administrative Services, the printing division, to provide that support, but we have taken on more of that ourselves so that we can keep it more current. In fact, this agency was one of the first small agencies to have a website, so it's been available for I think about 5 years now.
And do you have the whole licensing function within your office? Does your office specialist do all of the clerical work related to the licensing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, for the most part he does. It's kind of a shared task just because we work opposite days. So if there's something that needs to be done on the day that I work, then I would also take that responsibility.
Thank you. This appears to be, Senator Masary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the beginning balance and the ending balance, and I note that it's estimated that for the ending balance for this biennium, it's $68,872. I assume that's with the fee increase if it passes. I noticed that you're projecting in your budget an ending balance of $55,952. My question is that if you're getting a new fee increase in this session and your ending balance is decreasing, how long do you expect this fee increase to last? And am I looking at the right figure?
Mr. Torreson.
Senator Messerly, members of the committee, the fee increase will bring in a balance of a little bit less than $4,000. This board licenses in January, so they need to maintain a larger ending balance to carry them through from the end of the biennium in July until they get their money in January.
And
follow up.
So how long do you expect this fee increase to hold? You'll be back again.
That's a tough question. It would depend on licensee growth and other cost factors. I mean,
that's for speech assistance.
I apologize. I guess I'm not understanding. How long will this fee go on? Is that what you mean, or before it will increase?
Before there will be a need for a further increase, right?
That's very difficult to say. Just when the board put this fee together, they didn't really have any data on the amount of work or the amount of folks that were going to be in there because as a result of it. So they could be back if there's a cases that are expensive or this licensing base ends up being more expensive than originally thought. But as far as we can see, this will be it.
Madam Chair,
follow up.
I'm not sure I understand yet exactly the difference between the estimated ending balance of this biennium and the estimated ending balance of the 05 biennium, which is a difference of $13,000. And my point is that if that's a trend, then you're getting very close to being in a critical area almost before this fee increase takes effect.
Mr. Chair, I'll have to take a closer look at those figures and work it out with the legislative fiscal officer and get an answer to you.
Okay, thank you.
This may be a good point in the process to allow Mr. Torreson to take us through the BAM overview of the budget.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll be going through the budget management presentation. The second page of the presentation shows the historical context for the board's budget. It's a 3.2% increase over the legislatively approved budget through fifth special session, and their position count hasn't increased at all. The board, the governor's budget continues the current program levels once again, including a one-time increase for board travel. The board's entirely other funded, and it consists of one program unit. The breakdown of services and supplies is about two-thirds personal services and one-third services and supplies. The only special session activity was that the compensation plan that was passed for all state agencies in the third special session. The board phases out the board education package, and then they ask for it in package 283. Once again, we're recommending that it be approved on a one-time basis. Inflation and package is mostly for rent and attorney general rate increases. There's no additional attorney general usage. The policy packages on page 5 start. The analyst reductions, we reduced their expenditures to be more in line with what they spent this biennium, and that was also done with an effort to keep the ending balance enough that the board could comfortably get through to their next licensing cycle. The policy packages, the governor recommends approval for the speech assistant projected revenue, which is the fee ratification, and the one-time granting again of the board education package. And the only fee or revenue change is the one that the legislative fiscal spoke about, and that the board did make that fee half of what their full licensure fee is, in an effort to keep the fee as low as possible, considering the wages that the assistants are likely to earn. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Ferguson? Oh, this is just running like a well-oiled machine.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Messerly.
I do think I'm obliged to make a comment that this seems to be a very well-run board. And also, they if they are responsible for the refreshments They do a very fine job of that as well. They're not.
No bribes.
But I didn't want to get any chances here.
Just to put credit where credit's due.
Okay.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presentations this morning. I do want to note that this board has explicitly integrated a performance measure related to better serving minorities. And you've done this in alignment with the mandate in Senate Bill 786. Just want that to go noted on the record. Thank you.
Further questions or comments or any closing comments? Mr. Olson, do you have anything to add before I close the hearing on this?
Madam Chair, just a comment regarding Senator Messerly's question. As part of our analysis, when we go through these budgets, we look at ending balances, we look at the cash flow, and a lot of these boards vary with their cash flow from one board to another, depending on when their renewal cycle is. There are some boards that renew throughout the year, and so their cash flow is relatively flat. Other boards, like the speech, language, pathology, and audiology, renew at a specific time in the year, so their cash flow peaks, and then they have to expend that over time. As part of our analysis, we look at that cash flow and make sure that they have an adequate ending balance to make it through the biennium. What I will do as we continue to look at this and before we come back to work session is take a look and maybe make, based on the past history of the last couple of biennia, look at where we project the cash flow to be and the ending balance to be. And we may guess that they would need another fee increase in the future. It is worth noting, however, that this fee that is to be ratified in this session is actually a new fee during this last biennium. They did not increase their existing renewal fees. It's just a new fee. But we do analyze that, and we'll look at it and come back prepared in work session for you.
Is there anyone out there that wishes to come forward and testify on either the fee bill or the budget? Oh, we have someone. Will come forward.
Madam Chair, very briefly, I'm John McCulley. I serve as Executive Director for the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association, which obviously is very closely associated with this licensing board. And I just wanted to, in sort of response to your question about customer service and customer satisfaction, let you know that this board does an excellent job of outreach. At our annual meeting every year, they hold a board meeting during that same time and invite members of the profession to come talk with them. So I just wanted to put that on the record, even though it's not empirical data, but to let you know that the board does a very good job of reaching out to the customers it serves, and I think does a good job at that.
Thank you. Questions or comments from Mr. McCulley? Thank you very much. And I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5026 and House Bill 5051, and then open a public hearing on House Bill 5026 and 5050 as it relates to the Board of Radiologic Technology. Mr. Olson, could you take us through
LFO's
overview of this board?
Thank you. The Board of Radiologic Technology also has a fee bill accompanying that with the budget bill. I'll talk about that in a moment. The fee or the budget is a slight increase over the legislatively approved budget for 0103, 7.6% increase. Again, like the other boards, they're 100% other funded, no general fund or federal fund. There were no budget notes, no audit reports, no interim studies. The fee bill that you have before you for this board is a little bit different than fee bills for the other boards that you've been hearing. The Board of Radiologic Technology instituted a fee during this biennium that is an expedited license fee. In other words, the licensees can pay a certain amount of money. I believe it's $50. And that license will be, in essence, put to the top of the stack and processed in an expedited manner, as opposed to the regular processing manner for the other licenses. That is something that is somewhat unusual. I don't know that any other board has a fee like that, and so my recommendation would be that there be a philosophical discussion on this panel as to the practice of that. The board appeared before the emergency board twice during the interim. One was to increase staffing and limitation because of workload issues, and then a second time was to receive increase limitation for a projected office move, which has not yet happened, and the agency can update you on the progress of that in their testimony. The board continues to increase the number of licensees, and the workload continues to increase. The number of investigations, complaints continues to grow as well.
Questions or comments from Mr. Olson?
Thank you.
The Ms. Thompson, Mr. Miggins, and Mr. Patton, you're on the deck here. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Leanne Thompson. I'm Executive Officer for the Oregon Board of Radiologic Technology for the last 6 years. I'd like to take just a moment to thank the members from our committee last year who saw fit to give us some legislative appropriation to buy information technology equipment that made a huge difference in our capacity to keep up with our greatly increased workload. So thank you very much for that consideration during last biennium's budget. As you can see before you, this board regulates the use of ionizing radiation on human beings for diagnostic or therapeutic purposes. All of our licensees operate under the direction of a licensed healthcare practitioner, usually a physician. The mission of the board is to advance public protection by supporting the skills of those healthcare professionals who use ionizing radiation on patients. The board is committed to protecting the public and believes that the best way to do that is by supporting the professionalism of its licensees. So we put a great deal of focus and effort on that. Our licensees are beginning to understand that we really are there to help them. It isn't just a joke, we're here from the government and we're here to help you. It's absolutely true in the way we do our business. The board also would note that it represents working people taking responsibility for their work. This board has working professionals in the field as well as a lay member. Mr. Miggins is here as our public member who is also a certified internal auditor, so he can put CIA after his name. We have a physician, a radiologist, who also sits on the board, plus a radiation therapist. So those aspects of the profession are represented, and they are working techs in the field. So they really have a very direct knowledge of the conditions in the field of radiologic technology as it's practiced currently. The board has licensing fees of $4 a month, and we're the only board that I know of who prorates the initial license. We also have birth month renewal. That makes fiscal projections much more challenging, but it evens out our cash flow and our workload. But we can't predict the birth month and year of the licensees who will come to us, so it makes budgeting a bit more challenging. We do that so that we can minimize the out-of-pocket expenses to our licensees. We do everything we can to keep our costs down, and that's one of the important ways that we do that. We evaluate the initial and continuing competence of our licensees. For the radiologic technologists, those are graduates of at least a 2-year program in Oregon, that's PCC, or a 4-year program, Oregon Institute of Technology. One of our members is Professor Studeville, who teaches at OIT. So that for 2/3 of our licensees, 2 to 4-year degree minimum. 1/3 of our licensees are lesser trained folk. Those are limited permit holders, and they are trained by anatomical area. The training is in terms of hours rather than years, though. 40 hours of radiation use and safety, between 8 and 25 hours of additional instruction, then those limited permit holders produce diagnostic quality x-rays to be signed off. They also passed the board's limited permit examination. The board develops that test. We currently administer it. We're able to offer it four times a year in Portland. We're working on getting it automated. That hasn't happened yet. We also oversee the limited permit course of instruction for those limited permit holders. Those are the trade schools, Concord, Apollo, plus some specialty schools. The radiologic technologists, because they're college institutions, are overseen by other accountability boards, and we don't have a say in those. What we're requesting of you is that we get three full-time staff. We have seen a huge increase in our workload. During this biennium, the board participated in the governor's task force that related to worker shortages in the healthcare professions. The legislature also had an interim task force on the shortage of workers in the healthcare professions. And the Association of Hospitals and Health Systems has a work group that's, again, related to the shortage of healthcare professionals. We're committed to a collaborative, concerted approach to deal with present and anticipated shortages. In the back of your packet, there are some quotes about the Healthcare Sector Employment Initiative and the report of the Interim Task Force. All of the programs and services that we have relate to regulating those health professionals. I have some particularly gory pictures that I downloaded from the internet. I've been advised not to show them to you. If you'd like to see them, I have them available of what can happen if untrained people use ionizing radiation inappropriately. I'll tell you that it includes burns, cancer, blindness. You may already know this. Plus, I think more frequently, misdiagnosis, which is essential in order to be able to get good health care. We've just come out of a period of time when the board has hand-calculated its renewals in order to credit a dollar a month. We did a fee increase back in 1998. We went from $3 a month to $5 a month. At the same time, we implemented birth month renewal. We were trying to prepare for this health care crisis. Unfortunately, as then Representative Schrader put it, I think we got a little bit ahead of our licensees, so they weren't with us on that. We've been, again, hand-calculating those renewals in order to credit them with a dollar a month. Our projections, unfortunately, were accurate in that it costs us $5 a month during this biennium to issue those licenses. So this expedited license fee.
If I might interrupt.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm curious as to why you've chosen such a complex method to compute your licensing fees, because it seems that that would have an impact on just the workload that you have to deal with.
Madam Chair, if I had done the choosing, it would not be so complex. It was something I inherited that I took forward on the board's behalf. I heartily wish that there were a way to simplify it.
Is the board addressing this issue at all?
In terms of simplifying?
Yes. Excuse me.
Mr. Miggins, can you talk to us about how the board is dealing with this issue?
Madam Chair, Committee, I just got out of bed with the flu, so excuse me. We just had a retreat.
For the record, if you would.
For the record, my name is Hank Miggins. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of Radiology and Technology. The board just completed a retreat where it examined all elements of what we do and how we do it relative to cost of operations. And that the area of how we calculate fees and the workload imposed on us was one of the issues that we looked at.
Thank you.
And we will continue to be looking at that and making recommendations and coming with new issues how we should do that. We've gone so far as to consider whether or not this board should, whether or not these birth month is in a practical way to do it, and the calculations, which causes tremendous amount of work, without the technology to do it with.
Well, I would anticipate that even if you move into the realm where you're having this done by a computer, that the programming involved in the computations to do this is pretty complex.
Yes, you're correct.
Does the board have a timeline to deal with this issue, or is this just some ongoing?
It's ongoing. We haven't set a timeline on it because we're kind of unsure about where our support is. We're doing outreach with the rest of our people in the area to see what kind of support we have for making these changes without imposing changes on our licensees.
Question. Representative Smith, do you have
a comment? Yeah, how long have you been doing the licensees by birthday? How long is...
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we began the transition to birth month renewal in 1998.
So it's fairly recent, and you went to that hoping that it would be less of a problem for you, and it's proven to be just the opposite?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think that's an accurate characterization.
Okay. Well, maybe this is a question for our LFO analyst. How many of our boards license by birthdays, and is it a practical way to do it?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I can't give you an exact number right now, but I can find out for you how many do it by birthday. However, I will say that I do know that there are boards that that issue renewal notices and licenses that expire on a person's birthday. And then they will issue a renewal notice a month to 2 months prior to that expiration date. So it gives the licensee a month to 2 months to renew their license and keep it current. I will also tell you that these boards that do that have a biennial renewal amount. They don't pay per month. It's a flat, for an example, $100. And that $100 renews a license for a two-year period.
Okay.
And then it expires on their birthday.
Okay.
And some of the philosophy behind that is that in our lives, there's a lot that has to do with our birthday. Our driver's licenses expire on our birthdays, and it's just a natural reminder for licensees that my birthday is coming up. I wonder if any of my licenses, driver's license, professional license, whatever, expire on that birthday. So... we can have that discussion here in the committee, and I can continue to work with the agency, and we can look at seeing if there's a better way to do it.
Well, if we can help these people out and maybe advise the board or something and look at some alternative ways, I mean, if they're doing this by hand, too, in addition, I mean, that's just...
And Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I do know that some of the licensing boards in this state have computer programs that automatically kick out a renewal notice 2 months prior to the expiration date, and there's a variety of ways to look at it, and we can explore some of those options.
Thank you very much. Representative Bates.
I'd just like to point out that, to my knowledge, most of the health boards do it on a biannual basis for some very good reasons from the point of view of not the board, but the point of view of the licensee. And the reason for that is many of them are employed by large organizations, and keeping track of everybody's birthday when they have to renew the license is an unending task. And so in an organization that has med techs and rad techs and nurses and doctors, knowing when those come up and getting a notice from the board that your group needs to be relicensed is appropriate and the best way to handle it from the point of view of the licensees. And my guess would be that the majority of rad techs are probably working inside some of those organizations, maybe not the majority, but certainly a large number. And keeping track of those birthdays and renewing everybody's license by birthday has got to be a heck of a problem for them. And I don't know if you need legislative change for this. The board can take its own action, but it just seems a strange situation here.
And if I might also kind of build on where we're at here with the licensing, There apparently have been some issues around issuing licenses in a timely fashion that have caused you to kind of do an end run around your own process. So can you talk to us about the expedited license issue?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your support and understanding. Means more than I can say. Thank you. At least worth more cookies, I think. We purchase cashiering, bookkeeping, and accounting services from DHS. It used to be the health division. So their cashiers take in our money, process it through their system, reconcile it, put it into the state financial management system, then send the documents to us. So our regular licenses take, we say, 2 to 3 weeks. The industry called me in a year ago in November and said, we have a huge shortage. You have to do something for us faster. So our expedited license, we consulted to make sure it was legal, says if you come to us with no criminal history, a cashier's check or a money order, so we know you're good for the money, and you're current on your initial or continuing competence, we will walk your application through. But then we still have to take it back through the cashiering system. So it sort of loops through the system twice, which is why there's an additional fee. We've been committed to automating this process however possible. What else can I tell you?
Have at it.
I'll have at it here. This would be a question from LFO. How do other licensing boards handle this problem? Do they use the Department of Health, or do they handle it themselves with their own systems?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, some of these smaller boards that are located in Portland can continue to function under the health division in a similar fashion, where they process the receipts and those things. I will tell you, though, that some of those boards over the last couple of sessions have pulled out of that and have had the statute changed so where they are not under the health division and they handle it themselves with the assistance of the Department of Administrative Services. And I believe there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 boards still that are doing it through this system. There is legislation, at least for one of those boards this session, to pull out from under that. And there's been some talk about looking at pulling all of these boards out from underneath the health division.
Well, has the boards that have pulled out, have they become more efficient and more effective? Have they been able to run themselves quicker and easier?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the feedback that I've gotten from those boards is, yes, they are more efficient. But anecdotally, they love the situation now better than the way it was before. It's easier for them. It's not as many steps to go through, not as many hoops. It seems to be a more efficient system, although I can't say there's been anything quantitative to verify that. It's just anecdotal.
6,000. Madam Chair, why has your board not worked on these problems? I mean, obviously there's some support here to make these changes. Other boards have done it. Are you blocked by legislative action, or has it been something you've just not gotten to do? I mean, it sounds like you need to move to a biannual issuing of a license and be able to issue those licenses yourself with your own funds. Is there something that we have not done to support you in this?
Don't you want to handle that?
No.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I think, as I said, Senator Schrader had it correct when he said we got ahead of our licensees. We assumed that there would be a huge increase in the number of licensees, and we moved to a fee increase to $5 a month. Now, you could look at it. It was a change from, this is back in 1998. Okay, you could look at it as if it were an increase of $2 a month from $3 to $5, or you could say, oh my heavens, it's a 67% increase in my fees. And unfortunately, the people who took the latter point of view were extremely irate and sent lots of emails to legislators who were responsive to their concerns. So if we have new legislative directive, we would be delighted to approach our stakeholders with alternative proposals.
Madam Chair, Subcommittee, that's one of the reasons that we're doing outreach with associated groups on these kinds of things rather than take that step that we took then.
Can you talk to us about what you've been doing in the interim to get your membership apprised of this situation and have a discussion with them about what the options are and where you are in getting direction from them?
Madam Chair, the hand calculation was related to the crediting of the dollar a month. That reduced our revenues by 20% for the last 4 years and increased our workload by 6 or 7 times. So we had limited capacity for outreach. What we focused on in the last biennium was enhanced information technology. You have a photocopy of our website. We've really worked on enhancing our website, and we have on that a fee calculator. So if you put in the month and year of your birth, you can it will calculate. One of our licensees actually programmed this for us, and then we had it checked to make sure there were no bugs or anything in it. So for $675, we now have a fee calculator that's up on our website, so you can calculate the fees up there. There's also a licensee lookup screen on our website, and you can put in a person's name and get information about their license status and that kind of information. So that helps everyone have access 24/7. We've also put our applications up on the website. We've got our updated information form up on our website. We've sent postcard mailing to our stakeholders and talked to them. It says on the postcard, here are these updates, and also check the website regularly. We've developed a PowerPoint presentation that describes professionalism, what it means, you know, why it's called for. This has been offered about a dozen times in the last biennium at initial and continuing education activities. We've done extensive liaison with the professional society, but we haven't gone full bore into outreach about the options. We're still rebuilding the relationship, I think you could say.
I don't want to diminish the work that you've done, because I know that you have a very limited capacity. Yeah. But if the issue that you have is that you're essentially going broke trying to make your process work, it would seem that you need to have your first priority as fixing your process.
Madam Chair, I would be delighted to take that back to the board and work on implementing that.
Madam Chair. I feel like I missed
it. Representative March was
actually the one before you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to clarify. You charge the equivalent of $4 a month, but this is a two-year fee or a one-year fee?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative March, the initial license is prorated, and that was a requirement of the 1991 legislature.
Okay.
The renewals are two-year renewals, spaced throughout the two-year period.
Okay. So, and I can understand you're trying to smooth your cash flow. My suggestion would be $50 a year and odd even. If your birthday ends at an odd number, you're renewed one time and even, you know, so you have one cycle of
right.
A one-year license. And then you've smoothed out your cash flow process, and the $50, I assume the fee structure currently sounds like in law it's still $5, and you're back outing or taking back out a dollar. Is that correct?
Chair Morgan, Representative March, in the board's fees were removed from statute, and it says as set by the board in rule. And those rules have all been changed to say $4 a month, and we're almost done with backing out that dollar a month.
It might be time to revisit and have the legislature set by statute.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going to follow up with what Steve, Representative March, brought forward what I was thinking too. From the point of view of large health care employers, I think going to odd even might be a problem. I just want to point that out. A biannual review and renewal will be much better for them because they're used to that and they're paying for multiple employees. But having said that, is it not possible to actually sort of sell this to your licensees by saying we're actually going to, because of the intense amount of administrative work in doing the system we're under now, we're going to change this new system and actually reduce your fees so there's some gain for them? I mean, if you're using 20% of your time to crunch this thing through, is there a savings to you and overhead if you go to a new system?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, if I could just correct you a little, sir.
Feel free to, because I'm a little confused here.
It's an amazingly complex system, so I'm grateful that you all appreciate that. Employers often pay for the limited permit costs, but for the radiologic technologist, my understanding is that they usually pay that themselves, so it's not the large employers who pay that. And since, so that's one part. The other part is, we've just almost completed implementing this amazingly complex system. I cannot believe that there would be a cost savings associated with implementing a different system. Now, I could be wrong, but we've got this one working now. We haven't run those numbers. We didn't contemplate that right now. It was, too much to hope for.
Well, it's really difficult to help people when they don't want to help themselves. But I'm not sure where to go with this because, I mean, obviously we can see a place in your process that's a big money leak because it's a time leak. But if the board chooses to maintain the system that you have in place, then I don't know that, you know, we are... I mean, I'm kind of confused about what role we would have in imposing another system on top of this. So, would you like to comment on this, Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, a suggestion that I might offer would be to include a budget note in the budget report for this agency that during the next biennium, they get a group together, which includes the board, includes DAS, includes LFO, includes the constituent groups, and look at some alternatives to this system. And then report back during their budget hearing next session on the results of that study. I will tell you, I have had some experience with this, having worked for one of the larger health-related licensing boards, although it was many years ago. I was part of that staff when we went to a biennial birth date renewal system for licenses. And what Representative March and Representative Bates are talking about as far as odd even, what we did at that time was if you were born in an odd number of year, you renewed your license in an odd number of year. And if you were born an even number year, you renewed your license on your birthday in the even numbered years. So you did have a two-year license. It smoothed out the cash flow. It smoothed out the workload. There was a biennial fee, whether it be $25 or $50 or whatever that fee is. You don't get into the month-per-month issues. There are some issues with regards to initial license that would have to be worked out. But I think if we got together with the board staff, DAS, and constituent groups, that I think we could come up with some options to present to the next legislature. Mm-hmm. And my recommendation would be, at least for this, for now, not to put the fees back in statute, but leave them where they're at. They've got this system going for now, but let's take a couple years and study it and come back to the next legislature and present the options at that point.
Okay, I want to ask, I need some more information on the expedited license process. You described to us a process where part of it takes place within your board and part of it takes place within DHS.
The expedited part of it, I'm assuming you can't speed DHS up on what they do. So you have to be doing something differently within your part of the system when you deal with the expedited licenses rather than with the regular process. Can you describe to us what those differences are in your part of the system?
Madam Chair, when we get a request for an expedited license, we receive the application, we receive the cashier's check or money order, we receive the evidence of current, initial, or continuing competence to practice. We then assume that all money has to go to the cashier's office, but we get it first, we look at it, we say this is good to go, so we photocopy it and then enter it into the system and issue the license. Usually there are many phone calls, and we often fax that license, that initial license, to the applicant, who is now the licensee, usually at their new employment. But then it still has to go through the cashiering from DHS.
So what is it that you do differently that you don't do in your regular process? What are people getting for their $50 that...
I see. Chair Morgan. Generally speaking, all the money comes into... goes directly to the cashiers, does not come through the board first. We tell people, send this money to the cashier directly. And if by chance...
And the cashier being DHS.
Exactly.
Okay. Continue.
Then, Madam Chair, DHS then processes that. They have a transaction number that's printed on the document. They have reconciliation reports that happen, and then it's entered into the state's financial management system. And then they're batched, and their reports, and then that is sent back to us. And that takes 5 to 10 working days usually.
If I might just make sure that I'm understanding this fully, in the regular system, the paperwork and the information goes to DHS. They process it, batch it up, and send it to you. And then you do your part of the process and tell them to go ahead and process. Then you must send a bunch of stuff back over to them?
Madam Chair, no, we don't send things back to them. We then enter it into our database and print the license and send the license out.
Okay. And then in the expedited process, you receive yourself the paperwork and the payment, and then you process, you essentially do your part of the process and then send it to DHS, and they do their part of the process. Why don't you do that all the time anyway?
Madam Chair, we're required by law to deposit within 24 hours any money we receive. And with the staffing we have, we just can't turn them around that fast. We can't meet that volume demand with the staffing we have and the technology we have. What we've been working to do is to be ready for electronic commerce. When we were charging $5 a month, we had a separate contract to take Visa cards. But again, that's staff labor intensive because there are lots of reconciliation reports and cross checks that are required for governmental accounting standards. So we have to make sure that we're still in compliance with those governmental accounting standards.
Mr. Olson, can you talk to me about how the process works when it's within DAS rather than DHS?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that for those health boards that are not under the Health Division, DHS, they do most of this work themselves. DAS only provides accounting and payroll and those kinds of services for them. All the batching, the receipts, all that is done within their agency themselves.
Okay.
So my understanding is, and I'd have to check on this further, is that some of these steps that Ms. Thompson's talking about are eliminated when they're not under the Health Division.
I think it would be interesting. Let me give you my kind of editorial position on expedited processes. And I think that from a management perspective, to build a process around a process that doesn't work isn't the best way to go about doing things. That really what you want to do is find the root cause of your bottleneck and fix it so that the whole process is an expedited process. And given that, it may be interesting for this committee to get some ideas of how commissions that have like problems with processing their renewals that do it within DHS, how much of a workload issue that is for them, and whether that requires them to add staff to deal with it, and whether they're, I kind of see a linkage between the amount of time it's taking this commission to process the renewals and their lack of time to work on their need to have the expedited license. And I'm wondering if there is an interconnectedness on a solution here that will help the thing flow more smoothly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will try to get some more information this afternoon, and then maybe tomorrow morning before we have the hearing for the next board, we can talk about this briefly. I will tell you that from what I've heard with the reorganization of DHS, that this has even created more problems for these boards, that it has even slowed the time down more. We can certainly have conversations with the boards and get their feelings as to whether or not they desire to pull out from underneath DHS and do some of this more on their own, like some of the others have done.
Representative March.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there's also a danger in letting too many boards out there handling their own cash, so to speak. We in the auditing field, as Mr. Miggins is a former auditor, knows with internal controls, if you have a one-person board, they're taking the money in, they're spending the money. You know, you start getting problems about safeguarding the fiscal assets of the and so there's a delicate balance. If we look at replacing the DHS monetary system, and you know, there might be a thought of having them all contract with one cash operation. So you don't have all these various places where checks are floating around, you know, throughout the state government. There's a balance, a delicate balance.
Mr. Olson, can you comment on that from the point of view of LFO wanting accountability for the funds?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Marsh brings up a good point, and I will do some research this afternoon to see how some of these small boards handle that. That is a very, very real concern. There are several steps that these boards have to go through to maintain the integrity of the cash and accountability for that cash. But I will do some research and find out how they do that and how it can be handled. Many of these smaller boards are co-located in the state office buildings up there, and there probably could be some cooperative arrangement made for those kinds of things. Again, this is something that would have to take some time to work out those details. And we may not want to jump into it real quickly, but it's something to explore. And I might add just a comment regarding the expedited fee. My understanding is the board just didn't come up with this idea on their own, but it was the professionals that wanted it because, as they've said, there's a shortage of radiological technologists out there. And if a hospital has a technologist working and their license expires, they cannot let them work any longer. And so they expedite the license to get the license through quickly so they can go back to work, not only for the licensee's benefit, but for the hospital or the imaging services or whoever that may be. So that's part of the reason behind it as well.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to sort this out and see what the end result is, not only from the financial aspect, but I'm looking at the complaints for the past few years. And I note that operating without a license is by far the biggest complaint that this board deals with. I also note that so far in January they've had two, and if you multiply that by the months, it's going back up from 16 to 24. Also note that total complaints of 9 for the month of January. Again, if you multiply that by 12, the total number is going to be quite high again, if that is a trend that sort of follows through. So I guess I'm wondering if there's a tie-in between how you operate with awarding the license and the fact that you seem to have a quite high number of operating without. Also, I note that there's quite high the drug and alcohol abuse. One of my questions would be, how do these complaints come to you? In other words, operating without a license, does that come from the employer, from clients? Who's making the complaints? And same with drugs and alcohol. Because it might be that you've got a very efficient system of receiving the complaints, or it might mean that you've got a real problem within the industry of just high numbers in those complaints.
Let me kind of get your questions in order here. I think your first one was, is there a relationship between the complaints about no licenses and the issue about the timeliness of being able to issue the licenses? And then I think your next one was, how do the complaints come in? How do you receive the information?
I'm not sure. I guess there's actually a third one. Is there a trend developing here, and the numbers for 1 month seem to be rather high? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was helpful. Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, complaints about unlicensed and the timeliness of the issuing. The board issues renewal notices 6 weeks to 2 months ahead of time, and people tell us that they throw them in the drawer and forget about them. One of the difficulties with birth month renewal was that it was designed, and I swear I didn't do it. It was designed so that our license expires on the first of the month, the national registry expires on the last of the month. I don't know why, but that's confusing. That's confusing to some people, and I can understand that. If we're revisiting everything, hey. But that was part of the pull to have an expedited process so we could really respond quickly to people, no matter what anybody else's system was. If we had those assurance that we did have the money, so we maintain our internal control, and they had a clean criminal history, and they were current on their continuing or initial competence, then we could just go right ahead with it, knowing that we still had the internal control supplied by DHS's backup process. But we send out those renewals 6 weeks to 2 months ahead of time. The complaints come in from a variety of cases, everything from a mother who tells us that a technologist has threatened her 3-year-old child with never seeing her again if the child doesn't cooperate with the taking of a film. Sometimes it's supervisors. Sometimes it's the technologists themselves. By putting up that licensee lookup on the website and then calling attention to it by sending out postcards, we had hoped to address that. And I anticipate with continued outreach and continued reminders, it takes a while for people to get used to it, but with encouragement and giving of information to do the right thing, we hope to see that decrease significantly, the unlicensed practice. In terms of substance abuse, I've been consulting with the National Registry and the National Professional Society, and they do notice some additional difficulties in the field. One of the proposals that we have on the drawing board is to develop a panel of technologists in recovery and make that a continuing education presentation. You know, technologists who are willing to be public about their recovery. So our hope is that we can get that up and going and get it out around the state to encourage what we see as a vulnerability of our licensees.
And there was a third question.
If there's a trend, Madam Chair.
What trend?
Those things.
say that, please?
But the January numbers seem quite high compared to your yearly averages.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, some people had problems with the Super Bowl, and that's honestly what they told me. I don't know. I can't answer if that will be a continuing trend or if it's only a blip, but there was certainly a blip at the very least.
I'm talking about total numbers of complaints, not just the drug and alcohol.
Sorry, sir. Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, I really don't know. Perhaps people got distracted with the holidays. I can only guess. I really don't have hard data on that at all.
Further comments? Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, you know, I am concerned that we've spent a great deal of time talking about how the board functions sort of on a business platform of getting license renewed and getting people licensed. And the real questions, and I'm not going to go there now because for time, is your licensees are dealing with a technology that can be extremely dangerous to themselves and to the public,
yes.
And on both sides. We've not had a chance to even discuss that, what we're doing to look at those dangers. They're also dealing with technology, if not applied properly, can lead to misdiagnosis or more importantly, not misdiagnosis, but failed diagnosis. You don't see what you need to see. You don't find what you need to find. We're facing an explosion of technology as far as what we're doing. And so you're seeing an explosion of the number of people entering the field and the need to train those people. And there's a huge shortage because we've got bottlenecks in our training programs. People coming out of OIT are some of the most highly paid individuals because the shortage is so acute. We've not talked very much about problems of alcohol and drugs in this field, as in all medical parts of the field right now. And we haven't talked about what I think is ethnic diversity and what kind of people are being recruited to come into this field. So all the things that I'd normally talk to a board about have been sidelined by this logjam of stuff you're doing on the business end of it, so to speak. And I would really like to see that when you come back in 2 years, those problems are solved and resolved and put behind you so you can function as a board and get on to the real questions. Questions of safety and competency are so important for the licensees that you're overviewing. I feel we've been diverted here today into an area that it really shouldn't have been there. You should have taken care of this. Let's leave it there.
Further questions, comments? Senator Gordon.
Madam Chair, I would like to ask this board if they have a report available that talks about your accomplishments under the Senate Bill 786 mandate.
Senator Gordley, in terms of a complete report, I haven't done that. I would say that of our 7 board members, 2 are minorities. Mr. Miggins, who's here with me today, and we have also a person of Samoan extraction. In terms of Senate Bill 786, the board has been delighted for outreach efforts. In fact, encouraged other boards to participate in the Health Career Day, and also worked with having the health licensing boards meet together in order to work on a concerted approach to outreach to implement Senate Bill 786. Beyond that, took the concerns about diversity and outreach to the other small agency heads. So we've been active in the past, and as Representative Bates pointed out, this board has really been bottlenecked in its efficiency by those business concerns. I'm frankly delighted to hear you say that, because that's been my experience as well. And look forward to being even more active in recruiting cultural and ethnic diversity into the field. I've made liaison with Benson High School and the programs there. There are some other programs in other parts of the state, and it's the shortage of time, not the lack of intention or will, that has limited our success to date in implementing those.
I appreciate
follow-up, Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your statement, and Would you say that the addition of, well, you have a request for 3 additional staff? No?
No. Madam Chair, Senator Gordy, up to 3.
Up to 3.
We're at 2.5 now. We're just asking for another half time, up to 3 people.
I see. I misread that. All right. I'm dead.
Senator Mezzanine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bates started on a line that I'd like to pursue a little bit, and that is the education and the shortage of practitioners in radiology. Where are you, or where is the state? And I would think that your board could take a lead role in pushing this as far as distance learning and opening up this field to all of our communities across the state, community colleges, because it's a critical issue. And I would think that some of the problems we see here and the complaints could be dealt with in the education and the requirements of the certification. So could you speak to that?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, this is one of the delights of being in my position, is that we are working to develop distance learning. The board only has jurisdiction over the initial training of limited permit holders in the trade schools, but in terms of continuing competence to practice, we can develop offerings, and we've been doing that. We're working with PCC's Institute for Healthcare Professionals in order to get distance learning. I know that OIT has an interest in distance learning. As I said, Professor Studeville sits on our board, so my hope is that we can help disseminate the education and the testing all around Oregon. That would be extremely satisfying. We're dedicated to that.
I want to talk about performance measures. You've got a sheet here that has your links to the Oregon benchmarks listed, and I noticed that you've got one of them, well, you've got actually two of them that have been performance measures since 2000. You've got two of them that have been performance measures since 1996, and you've got one that was added in 2002. But can you help me find the data that shows how you're performing against those performance measures?
Madam Chair, in terms of collecting the data, this is a hand-done process. And I have to tell you, I'm not where I want to be in terms of collecting the data, because what we either have to do is hand count on Excel spreadsheets or pay the Office of Information Services from DHS to run special reports. And I have sort of workspace for one project at a time, and I'm just not up to speed on this one right now, except as they're indicated on the sheet. So they're not completely developed, and I apologize for that.
I think that all of the agencies have gotten clear direction from the governor and from LFO that this is that performance measures and links to the benchmarks are the way that we're going to gauge whether agencies are successfully completing their core missions. And so what I'm curious about is what the discussion is within your board to get your agency to a place where you can track these things.
Madam Chair, at the board retreat, if I can speak, the board's highest priority was automating its functions so as to have capacity to gather the data with an eye toward being able to respond completely to those.
I realize that, but what I'm interested in is what's your plan for getting from point A to point B? How are you going to get from where you are now to a place where you'll have the data available?
Madam Chair, the expedited license fee, the conversation with our stakeholders, ongoing information technology development, one of the packages that we have is for information technology for wide area network, local area network, database programming, that sort of thing. And so that was the plan, to get the capacity to gather the data electronically to measure that, because we are committed to measuring that. and complying. We have every desire to comply with that.
Thank you. There, I think we've kind of derailed this budget presentation pretty severely from what you probably had in mind to cover with us. So what we probably should do at this point is if you could possibly go back and cover the points in your presentation that we haven't discussed yet.
Madam Chair, I'll do my best. As Senator Gordley pointed out, we are requesting an increase of a half-time position permanently so that we would be at three staffers. And those three staffers would handle licensing and discipline, understanding that whatever internal controls or parts of the cashiering function that we handle would be part of that. I've talked to you about the fact that we have the licensee lookup screen. I have a chart in the back that talks about that the governor's balanced budget for the next biennium is $486,589. We've roughly prioritized them and allocated the staff time, both the executive officer, we have an administrative support staffer, and it's the office support staffer that is the OS2 that's been half permanently allocated at halftime, but we've been working her full time through the whole biennium. That's actually page 6 of the presentation, and we just looked at the percentage of the staff time and put the priority in there. I would note that all of our programs are supported by licensing fees except for the limited permit examination, which is supported by exam fees. And I've included some elements of administration because those are mandatory administration that's required of all state agencies.
What covers it, do you think?
Madam Chair, I think so.
Any further questions or comments from the board before we go to the BAM presentation? Mr. Patton, please take it away.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Patton with the Department of Administrative Services. I will be going over the governor's budget, which should be on the desk in front of you. If you go ahead and turn to page 2, this is a historical overview of the governor's budget. As you can see, the board has $486,589 other funds, which is a 9.3% increase over the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget through the 5th special session. The board would consist of three positions, all full-time. Page 3 is kind of an overview of what's included in the governor's budget. The budget would continue the current level of services to licensees and citizens, provide for some internet and web page upgrades, increase law enforcement data system checks, increase one administrative staff position to full-time, establish an expedited license fee, and increase the delinquent fee. Page 4 is a breakout of services and supplies to personal services. As you can see, personal services is about 69% of the board's budget. Services and supplies about 31%. Page 5, board did come to two emergency boards. In April 2002 is the emergency board where the position was increased to full-time during the last biennium. This was only awarded as a limited duration. They will be coming back with a package this biennium for that to be full-time next biennium. The board also gave the board some limitation for data warehouse charges, which is for their licensee lookup screen. In October 2002, they came back to the emergency board to request funds to enable them to move to a new location. These funds were unscheduled and haven't been rescheduled yet because the board has not chosen a new location yet. The only special session adjustment was for the third special session compensation plan adjustment. There was a slight decrease in the mass transit tax in package 010. Page 6 was a program adjustment. This adjustment phased out one-time expenditures for technology, administrative rule revisions, and increased stakeholder involvement. These were all in a package that was awarded last biennium. Package 030 has standard inflation for rent, attorney general, etc. It also includes an extra $1,700 for facilities rent. 64, Reconciliation of Space in the Portland State Office Building. Package 261 includes the part-time position increase to full-time and 200 law enforcement data systems checks. Package 263 is for timely licensing, which includes some computer upgrades and internet design. Package 264 is for the revenue from the expedited license fee. This fee is projected to give the board an extra about $32,400 of revenues. As far as fee and revenue changes, the delinquent fee was increased from $10 to $25, and the board established the expedited license fee. The only technical adjustment would be to eliminate the impact of the merit increases. Are there any questions?
Questions or comments for Mr. Patton? Thank you very much. Is there anything that any of the members want to add to the agency presentation or Mr. Patton's presentation? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know you probably were getting ready to do this, but I wanted to thank Mr. Miggins for being here. He's a public member and not one of the licensees, and I'm sure that his experience and background, he can relate back to the board the committee's concerns about efficiency and effectiveness of their policies that they've set in place, and I also want to just thank you for your public service to the state.
Thank you.
I would concur with Representative March's comments. I think that we don't say thank you often enough to people that take time out of their professional lives and their personal lives to serve on all of these boards and commissions. And it is, you know how critically important it is to the functioning of these entities that people do take the time to help make the policies and direct the process as it unfolds. And I do want to join Representative March and I think the other members of the committee too in recognizing the contribution and saluting that you've stepped up to the plate on this one.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I could add, I wouldn't want to leave this meeting without you all understanding that this board is anxious to improve the systems under which we are working. I think five of us are relatively new, and we're looking at things that we haven't looked at, and especially for myself. But systems are things that I am accustomed to working with, and staying within the demands of our clientele and within the constraints of our legislative processes, we are anxious to move ahead and get new systems in place to provide service and protection to the public as well.
Thank you. Are there any members of the audience here that wish to come forward and testify on either the fee bill or the budget? Please approach.
For the record, I'm Stephen Self, and I'm the site manager for diagnostic imaging at Providence Portland Medical Center, and I represent Providence Health Systems today. And I had a prepared statement, but since we're running a little long on time, I will just say that we're very supportive of the things that have been asked for today. We're also very supportive of the expedited fee. I've been in the state of Oregon for 7 years working in my current position at various places, and it's a tremendous help to get folks back to work primarily because they do forget to send in. And we, as a system, as all systems, I think, in Oregon, do also track and send reminders to our employees. So you have a double system of sending and reminding, and still folks turn up with their license expired, and I send them home. And to get them back as fast as possible is better for the patients and the citizens of Oregon. Also, we use a tremendous number of locums or travelers, and to get them on, I don't call them until I really, really need them, and to expedite them into the service and get them on board and working gets our backlog of patients caught up. And we just would appreciate your consideration of the request, and hope that you approve it.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Thank you very much. Marshall.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Marshall Koba, and I represent the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants, and I also am here today to support House Bill 5050 and the expedited licensing service and the associated fee and the discussion you've had earlier. Right now, the professionals, of course, in radiologic technology are extremely short supply, and the shortage is expected to continue for the foreseeable future. Industry representatives have demanded that the board offer the option of a speedier licensing process, and the board has done just that. Because of the costs associated with the faster process, the board now requests legislative approval of the expedited licensing fee. We support this fee and appreciate your consideration and urge your support. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Koba? Thank you very much. You. Anyone else wish to come forward? I'll close the public hearing on the two bills related to the Radiologic Technology Board. And we do have a couple of housekeeping things for the future. Tomorrow we have the chiropractors coming before us with their budget. We are, as you know, still rules challenged in this process here, so we won't be going to work session either tomorrow or on Thursday, which leaves us with nothing to meet on Thursday. So as things currently stand, we won't meet on Thursday, and if that changes, you will hear from Mr. Olson, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't.
Any further business before the committee? The meeting is adjourned. We'll convene tomorrow at 8:30.
I will.